It could have been worse if he'd smashed into the rocky mountainside. Thank the gods for snow-covered planets, Tag thought glumly. Snow fell around the viewport in soft waves, deceptively peaceful. He rubbed the back of his head, then steadied himself, grabbing a terminal to bring himself to his feet. The rips in his biosafety suit had grown larger, so there was no point in wearing it any longer. He slowly stripped out of the shredded plastic and set it aside. The white glow of the ice and snow outside put him in awe. He approached the viewport in reverence and placed a palm against the polyglass where he could almost feel the cold seeping through and into his flesh. His mind drifted back to Lieutenant Vasquez, stuck somewhere out there in the icy wilderness. In only about a week, the scheduled rendezvous with the extraterrestrial anthropologist would pass. He wasn't sure how he'd find her or if venturing out of the ship would even be worthwhile. For all he knew, the snow and ice had already swallowed the anthropologist, just like it had the Argo. A thought trickled through his mind like a burgeoning ice melt. Who in the three hells would choose to spend almost half a decade studying alien species on this planet? Chapter 13. Tag looked around the bridge as snow and ice continued to accumulate on the viewport. The warnings still flashed, telling him the cargo bay had sustained damage and was drastically underpressured. He punched a button on the terminal to silence the alarms. Red lights still pulsated across the deck, intermingling with the blue glow emanating from ETA-5's atmosphere. The cargo bay would have to be dealt with later, especially if he planned on getting off the planet. But he doubted he'd be able to make the repairs himself. He needed to bring the repair bots back online. He also needed to figure out what was going on with the ship's AI and to send a warning to the Montenegro. He turned away from the viewport and studied the mess in the bridge. The two pirates' bodies were lying still. Neither had moved since being tossed by the crash landing, but he didn't want to take any chances. For all he knew, those high-tech suits of theirs might have simply put their injured bodies in stasis. He couldn't risk letting them surprise him. His footsteps echoed in the vast bridge as he crossed the deck to the first pirate, and he bent over the man's body. Tag could tell the pirate was exceptionally tall, even with his body crumpled on the deck. The orange visor stared back up at him, cracks and all. He listened for any sign of breathing, maybe a respirator moving air in and out, but thankfully, he heard nothing. Crouching over the pirate, he wrapped his gloves under the chin of the helmet and tried to pry it off, but the helmet wouldn't separate from the rest of the armor. Maybe it was like the Marine's armor. There must be some way to release the pirate from the suit. He brushed his fingers along the chest piece. It was smooth, following the contours of the body within. There were no mechanisms to open it that he could find. With his boot, he rolled the body over. Besides the tubes and hoses connecting various segments, there was no obvious seam.
Fine. Stay in there, Tag said. I'm still making sure you're dead.
The mini-gauze glinted from where it still lay on the deck. Tag eyed the weapon. He could put another few slugs straight into the pirates' heads. That would ensure they never bothered him again. But then another thought seeped through his mind, squeezing past the effects of adrenaline, finally settling and letting his rational, scientific mind resurface. Making sure these pirates were dead would protect him for the time being, sure. But on the other hand, he didn't know where they'd come from, and the SRE could use whatever information they might have if the suits had indeed kept them in stasis. So if there was a chance they were alive, even just remotely, it might be worth his while to keep them that way. Even with an unconscious but alive pirate, the scientific staff aboard the Montenegro might be able to work their magic and salvage enough data from the pirate's dying brain to prove helpful. On second thought, I'm going to throw you in the damn brig. He grabbed the mini-gauze and strapped it over his back. But if you do wake up and try something, I'll make sure you're down for good this time. He wrapped his fingers around the pirate's wrist and started dragging the body. To his surprise, he felt little resistance. The body and full armor were much lighter than he expected. In fact, the pirate in his full assault getup seemed to weigh less than Kaufman when he'd taken her from her armor. With that, his thoughts whirling to the woman still barely clinging to a shred of life, he picked up his pace. The pirate's body bounced along the deck until he made it to the brig. Once through the hatch to the brig, a clear polyglass partition greeted him. He punched a command into the external terminal, and a small opening formed in the polyglass. With a grunt, Tag heaved the pirate through. He turned his back to leave, then thought better of it. The pirate still had his wrist-mounted weapons. Should the pirate let those cannons loose on the polyglass, Tag wasn't sure if the brig would be able to hold the man. He unstrapped his mini-gauze and slammed the heavy stock into the small gun barrels on each of the pirate's wrists. It took a couple of blows to bend the barrels and crack the mechanisms Tag assumed made the firearms work. Satisfied, he shut the brig behind him and left to retrieve the next pirate. Instead of returning to the bridge, he set off for the armory, which was closer. Again, he dragged the surprisingly light pirate into the brig and heaved him in. A brief sigh of relief escaped Tag when he saw the other hadn't moved. The devastating cracks in their visors and armor should have been enough to assuage his anxiety. But so much had changed in the past day that he no longer knew what to expect. Runner lights along the deck guided Tag to the bridge. He was almost there when an alarm beeped on his wrist terminal. One glance at the small hollow screen sent his heart pounding anew, and he forgot about the pirate's corpse waiting for him by the chart table. Kaufman. His boots slapped against the deck as he sprinted to the medbay. He flung open the hatch, then dashed to the lab where Kaufman's body lay. The decon hatch opened agonizingly slowly, and the lab's automatic safety mechanisms wouldn't let Tag through without enduring the entirety of the sterilization process. Gas hissed over him, then was sucked away. He waited for it to clear. The inner hatch finally opened and let him spill into the protected lab. There, on the deck, lay Kaufman's crumpled body. She'd had little protection from the fierce changes in acceleration, and her restraints had come undone. A split in her scalp and bruises along her bare arms evidenced where she had collided with the bulkhead when Tag had been engaged in space battle with the pirates. The wounds worried him, but they were superficial compared to the message still blaring at him from his wrist terminal. The cardiac support system had come undone during the ship's crash. It lay askew across Kaufman's chest. The electrical signal still fired from it at fierce regularity, but without its probes in full contact with Kaufman's flesh, the signal must be attenuating before it hit her cardiac muscles. Her heartbeat had ceased. No! Tag pressed the support system back over her skin and pushed the probes down. Stay with me, Kaufman. It's just you and me. The support system chimed each time it delivered an electrical pulse. You can do it. You've got this. But her heart didn't seem to hear him. Her EKG signal, delivered to his wrist terminal, maintained a flat line. No blood was pumping through her vessels. No oxygen was being delivered to her organs. She was dying. Tag pressed his palms in a triangle over her ribs. He pumped. 1, 2, 3. Come on. Come on. Still, her heart didn't respond. He continued pumping. His medical training told him it was long past time for him to declare her dead. But he couldn't believe it. He couldn't believe he was the last living soul aboard the Argo trapped on some frigid planet, that everything and everyone he'd known had been ripped from him by some damned pirates. He couldn't, wouldn't accept that. He hoisted Kaufman's limp body in his arms, her limbs hanging limply and her head cradled against the nook of his elbow. The cardiac support system whined and his wrist terminal screeched. She was already gone. But he ignored it and carried Kaufman through the decon chamber. The outer hatch hissed open and let them out into the medbay. His eyes grew watery and his vision blurred, but he ignored the harsh reality breathing down his neck. He ran, cradling Kaufman's body, and deposited her into one of the regen chambers. He secured her in and slammed the chamber shut. His fingers tapped across the chamber's terminal. But the regen chamber didn't begin glowing, nor did it hum to life. Instead, the terminal's hollow screen stared back at him with a singular message. Offline. He hurried to the neighboring terminals and checked them. None would respond to his commands. Panic swelled in him like he was a boiler fit to burst. The damn machine still wouldn't work and Kaufman was going to die. No, a voice in his head said, the one born of medical training and logic. She's already dead. It doesn't matter anymore. He pounded his fist against the chamber where Kaufman's body lay, drooping against the polyglass. Rage poured through him, directed at the pirates, at the carnage they'd caused. For no goddamn good reason. What if they wanted this badly? And why? What could possibly justify this massacre? Uncontrollable sobs racked through him, and he fell to his knees in front of the chamber. He continued to pound the glass until the nerves in his fingers went numb, and he could barely breathe. Gods be damned. Now the last person on this ship besides him was gone. He slumped, gasping for breath. He had to stay in control. It was the only way off this planet. Maybe the rest of the crew was gone too, but there were so many more lives at stake. Any rescue crew sent by the Montenegro to the ETA system would almost certainly be decimated by the ruthless pirates. And if the pirates started seeking revenge for their downed cutter, would they mount an attack against the Montenegro? Either way, Tag needed to ensure he somehow got a message to the rest of the fleet. He would mourn later. Who knew how many other exploratory vessels might unknowingly venture into pirate-infested territory? He stood, clenching and unclenching his fists. A brief memory of his early career, when he was back at Atlantis Station, returned to him. It had been shortly after he was taken out of the flight deck officer training program. He'd locked himself in his quarters with nothing but a bottle of station-distilled Gutfire. The drink had been aptly named, and Tag had drunk himself to the point that his body felt as sick and tortured as his mind had been. For the duration of his training, he'd been so focused on studying manuals on bridge etiquette and procedure, star charts and navigation, ship AI systems and weapons operations, he'd ignored all the calls from his parents and friends. He'd devoted his time so fanatically to officer training that everything else seemed to be of no importance, and at best a mere distraction from achieving his deserved success at the bridge. But in the middle of his Gutfire bender, he had finally capitulated to his flashing terminal and accepted a call from his father. His father, a scientist at an SRE-sponsored research institution, listened with patience as Tag unleashed a fiery tirade. He had taken it for granted at the time, but almost a decade and a half later, he admired how the man had listened to Tag lambaste the flight officer training program, blaming the officers and his classmates first. It took some time before he finally realized that maybe it was his own shortcomings that had led to the disastrous flight. His father had merely listened, waiting for Tag to come to this realization on his own. But once Tag had admitted his hot-headedness had risked the lives of his crew and earned the ire of his superior officers, his father spoke for the first time. "Is your career with the SRE Navy finished?" he'd asked. "No," Tag said. "But there's no chance they'll let me on the bridge again. They might as well have me discharged." "But there's a chance you'll be reassigned." "There is, but what does it matter? It's over for me." "What does it matter?" his father had asked with incredulity. "You have a choice. You always have a choice. And as long as they don't take that away from you, it isn't ever over." "Sure," Tag had said. "I mean it. You're on a highway, son. You've got so many exits in front of you, and if you don't like them, when you get off the highway, you can just get back on until the next exit." It was just like his father to use an outdated land-based analogy. "Each exit is there because of all your interests and talents. You're not a one-trick pony. No alley boy like most of these SRE junkies. Too many men and women join the Navy and are only good at one thing. That's all they've got, a single alley, a single road, an unavoidable dead end. But not you." "No, Tag, you're on a highway. There's always another exit, another choice." Tag had lost the will to debate with his father, an earthbound scientist who'd never known what it was like to stare in awe at the marble of blue and green from a ship headed for distant solar systems or travel at speeds faster than light through hyperspace as tendrils of blue and purple plasma swirled outside the ship. Knowing the delicate balance of physics and technology that had come together in such elegant precision to make such a moment attainable, there was no chance Tag would ever command his own starship. But he couldn't leave the stars behind. And with time, he'd realized his father was right. He did have other skills, other choices. He'd chosen to train as a Navy medic instead, His devotion to his education and his previous studies in the officer training program had turned out to be a boon, propelling him along a medical officer training path. He had picked up an MD and a PhD, specializing in advanced bio-AI interfaces, and he had never taken his eyes off the stars, finally finding his place among the SRE's exploratory division of the Navy. It had all led to this moment. Alone on the Argo, his father's words resonated with him now more than ever. "You always have a choice, and as long as they don't take that away from you, it isn't over." Wiping a tear from his eye, he left the lab, headed for the bridge to take the final pirate's body to the brig. As he reached the hatch to the bridge, a loud roar shook the passage. The Argo shuddered, and he grabbed a stanchion to prevent himself from falling. What in the three hells? It sounded as though the fusion reactor was powering up, ready to supply the damaged impellers with an influx of power. He ran onto the bridge and gaped, looking for the reason the ship's engines were rearing to go. He soon discovered it. The third pirate's body was nowhere to be found. It turned out his father had been right, and Tag wasn't the only one to take his old man's advice. The last pirate he'd assumed was dead had choices too, and he'd chosen to keep fighting. Chapter 14. Tag unstrapped the mini-gauze and scanned the barrel across the bridge. The pirate was nowhere in sight. The terminal near the pilot's crash couch was blinking, and he ran to it. A progress bar showed the fusion reactors had been ordered to run at maximum capacity, but the power wasn't being diverted anywhere. The main impellers were still offline. Pangs of worry gripped Tag as if someone was wrapping their fingers around his stomach and twisting. The surviving pirate was still hell-bent on ensuring the destruction of the Argo. Without any power diversion, the fusion reactors would initiate meltdown. Normally, the ship's AI system would act as a failsafe and shut down the reactors if the power couldn't be diverted, but the power levels continued to rise past the safety shutoff thresholds. Tag input a terminal command to shut off the reactors, and the command was manually overridden almost immediately. Tag knew what that meant. There was one other place to shut off the reactors now. He sprinted through the passage and jumped down the ladders to the lower decks. There, a narrower corridor took him to the reinforced hatch leading to the power plant, and he pulled down on the manual hatch release. But the hatch didn't budge, even as he tugged on it, throwing his body weight at it. The hatch remained staunchly fixed, and the ship started to shudder. Warmth started to permeate the hatch, making the handle hot to the touch. Tag didn't have long. Panic surged through him, urging him to hurry. But now was not the time for rashness. His mind spun, searching for answers, searching for a solution. A thought sprang to him, and he ran to the engineering bay. He searched for the tools he'd passed up earlier, and he snagged a set of chem catalyst cutters. A sustained groaning echoed through the corridor as Tag ran back to the reactors. He turned the cutters on, and a spike of hot blue plasma spurted from the tool. Clenching his jaw, he directed the tongue of plasma into the lip of the hatch. Sparks flew and sputtered as it cut through the thick metal. Another loud rumble shook the ship. Tag was almost halfway around the hatch. With his brow furrowed in determination, he fought to steady his hands and finished cutting around the hatch. He set the cutters aside and wrapped his fingers around the manual release again. With a grunt, yanked it, and with all the strength he could muster. Metal screeched as the edges of the hatch scraped, held in place by friction alone. His muscles burned, and he continued pulling as the hatch inched out. It finally fell free, and he jumped to the side as it slammed against the deck, clanging loudly. Almost as soon as it hit, a spray of blue pulse fire spattered against the bulkhead. But Tag had been ready. He ducked under the pirate's gunfire and peeked above the edge of the fresh hull shorn into the reactor chamber. Boiling waves of heat rolled over him, and the din of alarms singing in an unholy chorus hit him just as hard. More pulse fire grazed the opening, but Tag wouldn't be stopped. He spied the pirate barricading himself behind the control panels in the power plant. Beyond the two huge central drums that were glowing orange, the pirate's wild pulse rounds smacked haphazardly against the reactors and the bulkhead. Tag's only solace was the fact that the reactor chamber was built to withstand all-out naval assaults. Everything from the bulkhead to the reactor shields themselves was reinforced to withstand all manner of kinetic and energy rounds slung from enemy ships. They could endure a fair amount of abuse before crumpling to such weapons. Small arms fire might not even dent the damn things. Tag shouldered the mini-gauss and sighted the pirate through his optics. He fired. The pirate ducked and the slug slammed into the bulkhead. He used the opportunity to jump through the hatch. After hitting the deck and rolling, he brought the mini-gauss up to fire another round. The pirate flinched, but this time fired both wrist-mounted weapons. Rounds whizzed by as Tag sprinted between the reactors and dove behind a wide pipe. The reactors themselves started to vibrate, and the din of reverberating metal filled the room, drowning out the sound of the alarms. He crouched for a moment, recollecting himself and his thoughts amid the chaos. But there wasn't time to deliberate. There wasn't time for a well-thought-out plan. There was only time for immediate action. Tag burst from behind the pipe, pulling the trigger rapidly. A salvo of rounds flew past the terminal and the pirate, his wild shots missing as he ran, but he didn't care. The pirate had ducked, and that was all that mattered. Tag made it to the ladder leading to the control platform and jumped to it, firing all the while. The recoil of the rifle shuddered through him over and over. Once at the top of the ladder, he continued his assault on the cowering pirate. He stooped under a fresh blast of returning pulse fire, then leapt at his adversary. His arms wrapped around the pirate, knocking him backward, and they rolled onto the deck together in a jumble of limbs. Tag smashed the stock of the mini-gauss against the pirate's helmet, and the man's head twisted violently. He battered the pirate again and again until the visor cracked and spiderwebbed. "Don't you ever give up?" Tag snarled. The pirate struggled to raise his wrist-mounted weapons. His arms trembled as he aimed. Tag kicked one of the pirate's shaking wrists and easily dodged the other weapon as it fired. He took a step back, directed the mini-gauss at his enemy, and eyed the largest hole in the pirate's chest armor. Black fluid leaked from the busted plating. It was the spot where Tag had shot him earlier, back on the bridge. Whatever damage he'd caused had only been enough to wound the man. He wouldn't make that mistake again. He pointed his rifle at the pirate's head again, then fired. Rounds lanced through the cracked orange visor. The black power armor went still as the pirate within it let out a long, rasping death rattle. Strapping the mini-gauss over his shoulder again, Tag twisted to the controls. The reactors thrummed louder now and glowed almost white-hot. His fingers tapped across the terminal, searching for some kind of emergency shutdown. The malicious red alarm light swirled around the increasingly hot room. It was as if Tag was in the very bowels of hell. "Damn," he thought once again. "I need that AI working." The holoscreen gauges reported increasing temperatures within the fusion reactors, far beyond safety thresholds now. Soon enough, the core would burn through its containment shielding, and it would melt straight through the belly of the ship, spilling intense, devastating radiation everywhere and causing a chain reaction of explosions that would send pieces of the Argo back into orbit. His eyes searched the terminals. Finally, he spied a button labeled Manual Shutoff. He pushed it, praying it was the right one. He waited several seconds as the heat and power continued to build. They started to level off. But the alarms still wailed, and the emergency warning still flashed on the holoscreen. Eventually, the intense heat and power would dissipate. But the longer the containment shielding of the fusion reactor was above safe limits, the more Tag put himself and the ship at risk of destruction. He needed to divert the rest of the power, and there was only one way Tag knew to unleash so much. Chapter 15. Tag ran back through the passageway. He felt a twinge of guilt leaping over the bodies of his fallen crewmates, but there was no time to pay respects. The passage led into the bridge, and Tag jumped into the pilot seat once more. A corner of the display flashed the continual warnings from the fusion reactors. His heart pounded harder against his ribcage with each passing second. Sweat matted his hair and his shirt clung to his back. The heat from the reactors was permeating the rest of the ship. Not good. The most efficient way to burn off the excess power was to activate the T-drive. But Tag was in no position to fire the Argo into hyperspace. Setting off a T-drive so close to a large mass like ETA-5 would be devastating to the planet, and the debris from the force it took to bend space-time could just as easily crush the already injured ship. Instead, Tag eyed the controls for the impellers. The altitude and attitude adjustment impellers were fully functional, but the small impellers were meant only to make slight course adjustments or aid in docking. They stood little chance of sending the ship airborne against ETA-5's gravitational pull. The only impellers capable of pushing out enough G-force were the three damaged mains. But Tag wasn't looking to fly anywhere. He just wanted to divert energy, and the damaged impellers would only dissipate so much. And if Tag wasn't careful, siphoning off so much power from the reactors into the impellers might ruin them for good, eliminating any chance of him getting the Argo off this planet. Well, being marooned here is certainly better than disintegrating in a fusion reactor meltdown, Tag reasoned. And at the very least, he owed it to Kaufman to make it out of this alive. Someone needed to stop those pirates, to warn the SRE so others didn't end up like her. He threw the ship into full thrust. The Argo vibrated. Power coursed through the impellers as the ship rocked against its icy tomb. The main impellers whined, and the Argo jumped from its position before it belly slammed against the snowy ground again. A massive roar resonated through the bridge, piercing Tag's eardrums. Then all he could hear was a high-pitched ringing. But a message across his terminal told him what had happened. One of the three main impellers had blown. The other two continued to vibrate, sucking up power. Tag imagined them glowing a fierce purple, trying desperately to lift off, but instead of creating the gravity waves they usually used to direct the ship through space, they would expend the energy through heat. The ship lurched to port. The second impeller was about to blow. But a quick glance at the fusion reactor reports showed the power levels were still dangerously high, and Tag kept the power churning at full blast. Water surged around the ship and the Argo dropped. The intense heat emanating from the broken impellers was melting the ice and snow encasing the ship, and it dug itself deeper into the white blanket covering ETA-5. But to Tag's great fortune, the more the Argo embedded itself in the frozen environment, the faster the impellers dissipated heat. After several agonizing minutes, the warnings flashing from the fusion reactors disappeared. The temperatures and power levels had returned to below the safety thresholds. Tag kept the two remaining impellers going, but reduced the power to them. He disengaged the adjustment impellers, and the ship settled, no longer being shoved back and forth by them. Tag caught his breath. He hadn't realized how much the anxiety and adrenaline had taken from him as he slumped in the pilot's seat. With the back of his hand, he wiped a bead of sweat rolling across his forehead. He had done it yet again. He had forestalled his death and that of the Argo. But what now? With his thumb and index finger, he massaged his temple. His eyes traced the deck of the bridge until they caught Captain Weber. The man's body was still crumpled near the viewport after having sacrificed his life for only the gods knew what. Tag needed to find a way off the planet's surface and return to the Montenegro. But he had no idea how he would accomplish that. He could use the third and last escape pod to shoot himself out through the deluge of snow and ice, but he doubted it would even fire off with enough thrust to make it beyond the planet's atmosphere. And even if it did, what then? Drifting in space waiting for the pirates to return and finish him? Or hoping that a rescue squad from the Montenegro eventually came? Even if they did, though, they would have to fare better than the Argo against the pirates that had come to claim this part of the universe as theirs. Maybe he could send a light beam message to intercept the Montenegro's rescue squad as soon as they came out of hyperspace. It might be a long shot, but if he put an encrypted distress message on repeat, the rescue ship could be warned of the pirates before they ever ran into the assholes. Then Tag's heart dropped. He recalled the electrical anomaly coursing through ETA-5's atmosphere and the inability of comm systems to pierce it. He slammed his clenched fist against the pilot's terminal again. There'd be no way to send a warning through that shield. But another courier drone, maybe. He could shoot one off now with his warning. Surely it could propel itself out of the atmosphere and then hit hyperspace on its own. If he launched it fast enough, it might reach the Montenegro not long after the one Captain Weber had sent did. That would, of course, be the simplest and smartest course of action. Tag logged into the courier drone interface via his terminal. He activated the drone's AI to plot a course off the planet and into hyperspace. But when he tapped the execute button, the drone didn't acknowledge the command. The terminal simply reported the drone was offline.
"What's wrong with you?"
Tag tapped at the terminal and re-entered the command. Still, no luck. The pieces started to click together in Tag's mind. The rudimentary AI on the regen chambers didn't work, the ship's course-plotting AI hadn't responded, and the ship's network AI had stopped receiving commands. He brought up the AI logs. All AI-driven components aboard the ship were now offline. He tried to cycle them, but they remained offline. At once, he knew what had happened. The pirates had somehow subverted all of the Argo's AI systems. Every last system relying on a modicum of AI had been sabotaged. He combed his fingers through his hair, desperately fighting the urge to send his fist through the terminal's holoscreen. While he could, and had, piloted the ship himself, he could never engage the ship's T-drive without it. There was no way for him to manually map out every subtle calculation necessary to travel faster than light through hyperspace. Hence, the name of the T-drive, or Turing drive, so named after the godfather of artificial intelligence, Alan Turing. Without AI, Tag couldn't get the Argo to the Montenegro. As he scrolled through the logs, the painful knot around his stomach only tightened. A single line reported the SOS courier drone Captain Weber had initially launched had gone offline, and worse yet, it had never reported a jump into hyperspace. The last report before Tag had crashed through ETA-5's atmosphere stated the drone was still floating somewhere above the planet. It was completely lifeless. No one knew the pirates existed. No one knew the Argo had been attacked. No one knew the ship needed saving. Chapter 16. Without the ability to repair the AI systems on his own, and no idea of how to contact anyone beyond the ETA system, Tag resigned himself to a single hope, finding the extraterrestrial anthropologist. He had about a week before the scheduled rendezvous with Lieutenant Vasquez. Maybe, just maybe, she'd have a surprise courier drone waiting for use, or maybe the species she'd studied had some alternate means of communication they could use. It wasn't much to hope for, but it was all he had. In the meantime, he had no idea where she was, and no interplanetary comm system responded to any hail attempts. He didn't want to risk getting lost in the unforgiving Arctic environment of ETA-5 and a fool's errand of a search for her. Instead, he would wait until closer to the preordained date to take the Argo's exploratory air car to meet her. For now, he had plenty to keep him occupied aboard the ship. There was one particular task that stood out above the rest. He picked his way through the corridors of the ship, barren of life but filled with the bodies of those he'd known. Morgan and his charge outside the medical bay, engineers with whom Tag had shared many a conversation, ranging from cryopreservation for long-term stasis to the ethics of manual genetic manipulation in humans to the future of faster-than-light travel. The bridge with its officers who'd valiantly made their last stand at the helm and passageways full of Marines who'd died trying to prevent the ship from falling in the hands of their captors. Tag couldn't simply ignore them as he tried to make what repairs he could to the vessel. He returned to the medical bay and took one of the hover gurneys. Without the medbay's M3 droid, he had to load each body himself. The work was grueling, both emotionally and physically, and he had trouble finding a place to put all the bodies. The thought crossed his mind that he could leave them planetside, where the extreme cold would keep them preserved for an eternity, but no one in the crew deserved such an ignoble fate. The men and women of the SRE Navy had earned a proper burial in space, and he vowed to get the Argo spacebound. If for nothing else, he wanted to pay the proper respects to all those who had given their lives. Ultimately, he decided to store the crew members in the torpedo bay for the time being. From a terminal within the bay, Tag adjusted the local environment to chill the air. Once the temperature dropped, the space was cool enough to work like a vast morgue. There was also plenty of room for the storage. Too much room, Tag noted inwardly. There was no sign of ordnance anywhere within the bay, which was empty except for the two defunct torpedo-loading drones near the launcher tubes. Tag had never found a reason to spend any time in the bay, as it was off-limits to most crew members, but he was surprised to find no torpedoes of any kind. Maybe the pirates had taken whatever the Argo had carried. Regardless, the large space and lack of ordnance provided ample room for the deceased crew. If the Argo made it off this godforsaken planet, Tag would launch them out of those tubes as befitted their honorable deaths. It took the better part of a day for Tag to transport the crew to the bay. He made his rounds from the bridge to the crew quarters to the galley and everywhere in between to ensure he hadn't missed a single member. Stowing Kaufman's body proved to be the hardest. He fought the illogical urge to check her pulse just one more time. His eyes brimmed with tears each time he looked down at her still form, and he brushed away a lock of her blood-matted hair. "I'm sorry I couldn't save you," he whispered to her. Before he set her down beside the rest of her downed Marines, he kissed her forehead and closed his eyes, desperately collecting himself for the monumental tasks ahead. Once the morbid task was complete, he walked dejectedly to his quarters. He took a long shower, letting the warm water rush over him. His eyelids felt heavy, and the thought of crashing into his bunk tempted him. It would be a blessing to wake up and find this entire tragedy was no more than a nightmare. But that would be too easy. Instead, Tag trudged to the galley and made himself a cup of strong coffee. He gulped the hot liquid down, praying it would allay his exhaustion. After stuffing away a dehydrated nutrient packet, he went back to work. Like all members of the research vessel, he had an EVA suit for off-ship missions. He grabbed it from his cabin. From the armory, he gathered an additional mini-gauze and several loaded magazines. He scrapped a field scientist's suit for the navigation sensors and attached them to his own suit. It would have been much easier to take one of the field scientist's suit for his own, but of the three researchers, none shared a body type remotely tall and thin enough to fit him. Likewise, the Marines' EVA suits were customized to fit each wearer exactly, and most were fitted for individuals much shorter than him. Those Marines that had been his height sported a more chiseled physique that, despite Tag's best fitness regime, he simply couldn't match without their considerable genetic enhancements. From one of the Marines' EVA suits, he took the holsters for sidearms and attachments for ammunition storage. With a fair bit of effort, he secured all these extraneous components to his own suit. The only thing he couldn't salvage from the Marines' suits was the built-in armor plates. The thought of running into pirates, or even something far worse, on ETA-5 made that fact hard to swallow. But there was little he could do. Back in the galley, he grabbed a few containers of water and dehydrated nutrient packs. He ensured he had enough food for a several-week journey should some unforeseen disaster occur, which he deemed rather likely given the events so far. He lugged all these supplies back to the corridor near the cargo bay. The rupture in the inner and outer hull around the cargo bay meant he wouldn't be able to safely access the bay without donning his EVA suit. He peered through the porthole in the hatch. Ice sparkled over bits of torn alloy and snowdrifts piled against various crates and over the boxy, jagged shape of the air car. The car would be his mode of transportation to Vasquez, but loading it could wait. With everything ready to go and waiting by the cargo bay hatch, it wouldn't take more than 20 minutes to get his supplies into the vehicle. Now, the most important task was attempting to restore the ship's AI. Even though he'd studied the basics of AI on ships in his Navy education, he feared he didn't have the acumen to effectively diagnose and repair the massive damage the pirates had managed to inflict on the computers. But he did have one idea, one almost quixotic idea. It was one he'd worked on for years, and there was no better time to run his first real-world experiment. An unavoidable yawn signified that the effects of coffee were waning as he padded back to his quarters. Exhaustion crept into his flesh. The turmoil of the day had taken its toll on his body, and what he had in mind would have to wait. He needed his brain operating at 100%. For now, the only thing he could do was sleep. Chapter 17. Tag woke, gasping for air. His pulse pounded in his ears, but there were no alarms, no flashing lights, no sounds other than the creaking of the ship. He sat on the edge of his bunk and listened for a moment, but he didn't hear the pirates scouring the ship for signs of life, nor did he catch the telltale footsteps of his crew preparing the ship for flight. He was, well and truly, alone. As anxiety faded, the pain crept into his body. His head pounded and his bones felt weak. A mottled bruise had formed along his ribs, and he imagined that the soreness in his cheekbones bespoke black eyes and bruised skin from the prior day's battles. He slid from his bunk, and the cold deck met his feet, sending chills through his goose-pimpled flesh. He donned his clothes and slipped his boots on, then left his cabin. The lights in the passageway greeted him. He rotated his arms, his joints seemed to click, and a throbbing pain in his left calf forced him to walk with a slight limp. A constant fire burned in his ribs, flaming with every breath. Tag wondered how he hadn't noticed any of this yesterday. Probably too busy trying to stay alive, Tag frowned, and then preparing the crew for a space burial. He continued his hobbling gait to the brig. There he made sure the three pirates' bodies, including the one he'd taken from the reactor room, remained unmoving. He considered trying to pry their armor off again, but thought better of it. It had been difficult enough the first time, and what did it matter who these people were? He wouldn't recognize their faces. It would be a waste of time. And he couldn't help the half-paranoid thought that they might have booby-trapped their armor to explode should some unauthorized person start tampering with it. After the ferocity and desperation he'd seen in these people in their attempt to rid the universe of all evidence the Argo existed, the thought didn't seem so far-fetched. Satisfied the dead were still dead, Tag trod to the medical bay. He looked through some of the portholes on his way there. All were covered in snow. It was a somewhat reassuring sight. The atmosphere of ETA-5 should protect against probing radar or LIDAR, and if an enemy ship did decide to venture through the strange atmospheric barrier, the snow would provide a formidable visual obstruction, concealing the Argo from prying eyes. As long as he didn't start up the impellers, and it didn't look like he'd be able to any time soon, it would be difficult for anyone to happen upon the ship, even with the most sensitive of sensors. Of course, that meant if for some reason a rescue party ever came, it would be just as hard for the Argo to attract their attention. Tag wondered if the same fate had befallen the UNS Hope Generation ship that had been lost in this sector of space so long ago. He could now see how such a huge ship might escape the efforts of the past exploratory ships trying to find it. Three hells, he thought. Maybe the Hope is somewhere on ETA-5. But finding lost generation ships wasn't his major concern. Getting back to his fleet was. And in order to do that, he'd need some help. Some AI help. The M3 droid was still slumped where he'd left it in the med bay. Tag grabbed it and placed it atop a patient exam bed. Due to its caretaker-like role, the droid was one of the more humanoid bots aboard the ship. The SRE Navy's researchers had claimed the thin frame and silver arms modeled after a human's were more comforting to the injured than a more utilitarian bot such as the tentacled, octopus-like droids responsible for ship repairs. He started to strap the bot into the exam bed's safety straps out of habit, then stopped himself. They weren't hurtling through space, and the dead droid wouldn't be going anywhere anyway. At least, not yet. Tag assembled a set of surgical and normal hardware tools. He stared at the droid's face. Its designers had given it visual sensors that looked like blank, unstaring eyes and a mouth that actually moved when it spoke. But they'd given the rest of its face a distinctly machine-like appearance so as not to frighten patients by venturing too far into the uncanny valley. With a bit of cutting and unscrewing, Tag withdrew the panel along the back of the droid's skull. There he found a mostly empty space. The main processor was housed in the droid's torso, but he needed to make sure there was plenty of room within the head of the unit for what he had planned. If I only had a brain, Tag half sang to himself. He started whistling the ancient Wizard of Oz song, half amazed at the longevity of 2D films in the era of VR hollows and entertainment that absorbed all five senses. There was still something mythical and mystical about a flat-screen movie. He laughed aloud, half mad. If all these efforts failed, he'd have plenty of time to watch all the 2D films he liked stuck in this damn ship buried in the snow. He carefully undid the main chest plate of the bot. There, the proverbial heart of the droid rested. Thin wires emanated from a central processing unit that performed all the robust calculations needed to sustain the droid's AI. Tag found a small manual restart button within the hardware and pressed it. Several seconds passed. He hoped to see the droid whirr back to life, with a fresh restart. Maybe whatever virus or command the pirates had inflicted on the Argo would be vanquished from it. But the M3 droid remained dormant. Two more attempts to restart it were met with the same fruitless results. Tag eyed one of the ship's intranet ports. He could hook the droid up and scour the code that gave it life, but such a task, even for someone who knew their way around these systems, would take weeks, maybe years. Time that Tag didn't have if he wanted to warn the Montenegro. Besides, the virus, or whatever the pirates used, might still be sitting on the ship's intranet, ready to sweep back into the droid and make it lifeless once more. There was nothing he could do in the digital realm of the ship to reverse the damage to the AI systems. It was time for surgery. With slow and careful movements, Tag undid the wires around the processor. He pulled it from the droid and set it aside on a nearby table. He labeled each wire so he remembered which provided sensory input or controlled the droid's navigation systems. The tedious process took several hours. Minutes seemed to bleed by as Tag succumbed to tunnel vision focus on the project. His dissection ended after he felt certain he'd taken all the components that gave the droid its AI. A slight feeling of guilt swept through him. It was as though he'd torn the brain and heart out of a human. He surveyed the array of wires, chips, and other electronics on the table next to him. This had been the soul of the droid. Now for the most crucial part of the experiment. He unlocked the exam table the droid's shell lay on and rotated the table vertically, with the droid strapped in, to fit in the decon chamber. The table's wheels squeaked as he pushed it into the decon chamber. Once in, white gases hissed over him, then the chamber opened and let him into the lab. He walked to the terminal, and his fingers danced over its input display. The lights glared more brightly, and he focused them on the droid's table to give the space a makeshift surgical suite appearance. The air in the room had already been contaminated when he and Kaufman had sought shelter here before, but Tag hoped that wouldn't compromise what he was about to do. He opened the incubator at the far end of the laboratory. The door opened with a release of hot, humid air, and he gazed on the small object that represented years of work and toil. Years of dedication as a medical officer and researcher, a culmination of everything he'd worked toward. He wasn't scheduled to begin experiments with this item yet, and the first few experiments would have been more subdued and simple than what he had in mind. But as he donned a pair of surgical gloves, he decided there was no better experiment than trial by fire. His fingers wrapped around the polyglass container, rotating it slowly, and light hit the object, making its half-synthetic, half-biological flesh glisten. This was what he'd devoted himself to after realizing his career wouldn't lead him to the bridge. But maybe this was fate, telling him it had turned out better after all. He peered at the object, rotating it gingerly. This was it. This was the first live synth-bio brain to go into a droid. Chapter 18. Tag gingerly placed the polyglass container within the synth bio brain on the table with the lifeless droid. This certainly wasn't the first experiment he'd wanted to start on the Argo, but now it would have to be. The combination of biology and computers was not Tag's idea. The many researchers that had come before him shared the common objective of adapting one of the most sophisticated computers known to man in the pursuit of artificial intelligence. the human brain. The field's historical roots dated back to the early 21st century. Researchers had developed brain-computer interfaces by using isolated rat neurons to control miniature drones and even fighter jet simulation programs. These advancements progressed slowly but surely and led to savvier brain-computer interfaces. But leaps in more traditional computer technology had made the field of synthetic brains almost obsolete. These half-biological, half-mechanical processing units cost far too much more in time, labor, and money than the standard mass-produced computer unit. And most experimental synth-bio brains were still restricted to basic, single-minded tasks like guiding missile systems that didn't require the same tremendous processing power as steering a ship through hyperspace did. Besides, those simple tasks had already been conquered with the more ubiquitous hardware-based computer and AI systems, making synth-bio brains both less efficient and redundant. At least, that's what everyone else thought. Tag placed the polyglass unit with the synth-bio brain in the skull of the droid with reverence. He planned to literally and figuratively breathe new life into his vision of what synth-bio AI could be. Sure, a purely software-based AI could do its job well, but there was a certain vitality that machines lacked. Humanity hadn't evolved from stone tools to spaceships capable of interstellar travel by being able to perform calculations well. No, it had always been the ability to dream, to believe, to inspire, to feel, to intuit. Those were the properties that separated humans from the most advanced AI, and that was why he hoped to combine the best of both these worlds in his synth-bio brain. That's what he'd always told Kaufman, and she'd been his most adamant believer. He felt a little like Dr. Frankenstein as he connected the conduits and wires of the droid's sensor arrays and servos to the synth-bio brain unit. The entire unit and all its connections fit comfortably in the droid's head. The location of the brain unit wasn't solely to mimic human anatomy, but it certainly didn't hurt to make this droid feel more lifelike to Tag. Due to the biological component of the synth bio brain, it was necessary to fit a miniature life support unit into the droid. The torso, now devoid of the processor and other unneeded components, was a prime spot for holding the life support mechanisms. These mechanisms pumped nanoparticles that served as artificial blood cells, delivering all the nutrients, oxygen, and even immune system mimicking molecules that the living part of the synth bio brain needed to survive. The life support unit also generated and delivered power to the droid. In a way, the heavy, tube-shaped device in Tag's hand was a synthetic replication of most human organ systems, scaled down and built with electronic components. He inserted the canister into the torso and spent the next couple of hours connecting wires and tubes, then checking and rechecking them. His stomach growled, but he ignored his own body's needs. He was too close to seeing this one come to life. Anticipation lit his nerves on fire, but he willed himself to remain calm and unhurried as he grabbed a terminal and hooked a diagnostic tether to a port in the bot's torso. One by one, he powered up each of the droid's systems. First, he checked that the life support's batteries and miniature fusion center were able to generate, receive, and store power. Green lights on the terminal's holoscreen signified they worked properly. Then he ran a quick diagnostic on the materials within the artificial bloodstream loop. Everything was there and accounted for. He moved on like this, meticulously debugging any unexpected results. His heart fluttered when he sent a small burst of power to the synth bio brain. He simulated an auditory sensation through the terminal's connection with the droid, the sounds of birds chirping. A smile tore across his face. The appropriate lobes of the synth bio brain lit up. Then he delivered a visual cue. The sun. Earth's sun. Several different portions of the brain glowed on the display, signifying neural activity. Next, he delivered a more abstract cue. One humans knew well, but computational AI had no concept for, other than a rote dictionary definition. Pleasure. A dopamine effect rushed through the synth bio brain, and he watched the holoscreen's image of the brain light up in a bevy of neural sparkles like distant stars across the universe. Now happiness spread through Tag like a warm tide. Had he done it? Had he actually created the SRE's first synthetic biological life form? He continued quizzing the synth bio brain with more restricted, simulated senses and emotions. It was working. It was truly working. A hoot of victory escaped his mouth and he pumped his fists in the air, dancing around the lab, but then his elation evaporated. There was no one to celebrate with him. Yet a small spring of hope trickled up through his despair. Out of all the tragedy and death aboard the crashed Argo, new life appeared ready to emerge. The testing continued for some time, with each result ending up in a notebook he labeled Experiment Alpha 1. He prayed there would be no Experiment Alpha 2, 3, or 4, much less a beta series. This had to work. He lost track of the seconds, minutes, and hours, too enthralled by his invention. Finally, when his fingers started to twitch and his vision blurred, he stepped back and took several deep breaths in and out. This was it. This was everything he'd worked for. The time on the Argo was supposed to be for the development and growth of more synth bio brains based on this original unit, but he hadn't had time yet for any of those nascent experimental brains to mature. Most were still squirming neurons replicating and dividing in cell culture plates. This was the only one he'd ever completed, and now it was time to see if his work would make the SRE Navy proud, or if it was all a foolish embarrassment. Emotionally, he was ready to turn the whole unit on, but his hunger continued to nag at him, and his eyes were feeling heavy once again. There was no telling how the droid would react to its environment once it was fully untethered. He needed to be prepared mentally and physically to welcome his creation into the world. Tag dragged himself to the galley, where a large holoscreen displayed the current Earth time. He had been working for almost 20 hours straight. The digits glowing across that screen seemed to break the dam holding his exhaustion back, and he barely mustered the strength to down a quick meal before returning to his bunk. But when his head hit the pillow, his mind went into full gear. He slept in bursts and spurts, waking frequently, unable to tame the excitement surging through him long enough to get a restful night's sleep. After 5 hours of tossing and turning, he jolted from the bed and headed to the lab. He rushed through the med bay and the decon chamber. His work lay sprawled over the exam bed like a half-finished surgery. He closed the droid's torso and secured the head panel shut. The tether still traced from the torso port to the terminal he'd been working on, where the holoscreen glowed, beckoning to him. A single command now appeared before him. Initiate all systems. His finger hovered above the holoscreen, and his heart climbed into his throat. He tried to think of reasons not to power up the droid. Maybe he'd missed something during diagnostics. Maybe he hadn't attached the sensor arrays properly. Maybe the synth biobrain technology just wasn't mature enough, and so much information overload would fry it. He shook his head. You trying to psych yourself out, Tag? He closed his eyes, inhaled slowly, then stared at the initiate all systems command again. The screen felt almost warm to his touch when he pressed the button, and a second prompt asked him to confirm his choice. He selected yes. A humming sound echoed through the torso of the droid. The silver shell started to vibrate softly at first, then increasing steadily. Tag prepared to perform an immediate shutdown via the terminal, but the vibrations stopped. A few graphs blinked on the holoscreen with reports on the droid's version of vital signs. The life support system had activated properly and was pumping the synth blood to the brain. The droid's mechanical fingers twitched. Tag cautiously approached the droid's side, peering between it and the terminal readouts. Something flickered behind the droid's eyes. The glowing black orbs swiveled, and for a moment, Tag could feel those eyes pierce his own. It was alive. Chapter 19. Alpha 1, you're awake. Tag placed a hand over his chest. I'm Tag Brewer. Can you understand me? The droid jolted upright, causing Tag to jump back. He tried to maintain a stoic, calm expression, but he couldn't stop the nervous perspiration or the excitement in his voice. Can you understand me? He repeated. The droid gawked, its head tilted and the black eyes dug into him. Alpha One's mouth opened and closed as if it was trying to vocalize something. It raised a silver hand in front of its face and rotated it. All five fingers clenched and unclenched, and it studied the flexing digits. Tag took a careful step forward. Alpha One's gaze shot toward him. Its metallic lips straightened, and it stared silently, frozen. Tag held out his hands in a welcoming gesture. How are you, Alpha One? The droid gazed at him quizzically, then resumed its emotionless expression. Tag almost laughed aloud. Of course it looked emotionless. Did he expect the thing to be happy, or maybe grateful to be alive? It almost certainly didn't even know what it was, much less how it should feel. He didn't want to take his gaze off the droid, but he looked away for a moment and glanced at the terminal's holoscreen. All readouts appeared normal. The model of the synth biobrain on the holo projection lit up in waves of rolling colors throughout the artificial organ. Alpha One was full of neural activity, even if it was